Welcome to the BBB podcast number 3. I am Tyler Russell, the Marketplace Manager for Better Business Bureau Northwest and Pacific and serving Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. BBB Northwest and Pacific includes Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Western Wyoming. Now, each month we cover topics in the BBB realm, and of course, Kent being Kent is being Kent as per usual. You can, of course, find... You can find Spokane Talks on YouTube at Spokane Talks, Facebook, Spokane Talks Media, Twitter, Spokane Talks, and of course our website, SpokaneTalksMedia.com, email SpokaneTalksOnline@gmail.com. All things BBB you can find. Better Business Bureau, Northwest and Pacific, serving Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. You can find me on Twitter, Tyler BBB, Northwest and Pacific. Also, we're on Instagram, BBB Northwest and Pacific. Our website, BBB.org, and you can of course email me, Tyler.Russell@thebbb.org. Today we're going to be talking about some 2019 Torch Awards. Nominations are right now open, and we will be speaking with Jeffrey McLaughlin with Professionals at Play. Kent, good morning.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Whatever it is.
Some part of the day.
I think it's nighttime by the time you got that intro. That's what people are wondering. Why are you laughing and giving me a bad time?
Because
I was pretending like I was sleeping. Your intro is so long, you know.
But I'm talking
about
you.
I've had two birthdays since you started.
I'm talking about your stuff. And it's like, wow, that was the most boring stuff that I've ever heard of. No, it's not. It's important. Oh, people need to know what's new in your realm.
Yeah, well, we're moving.
That's what I hear.
Yeah, we're moving in the next couple of months. They're closing down this building, so...
Please don't ask me to move any heavy boxes.
No, no.
That's all I ask.
No, I'll keep the light ones for you, but there'll be more because they're light, okay?
All right.
So what's this about awards? Am
there
I getting an award?
Well, you gotta go and put your application in for the awards.
Oh.
2019 Better Business Bureau, Northwest Pacific. We have the Torch Awards. So we have a number of different ones this year. We've got Tier 1 Awards, which are businesses between 1 and 10 full-time employees that demonstrate a commitment to ethics, integrity, and building trust. Also, we have a Tier 2, which honors businesses 11 and up. They have to be full-time employees. We also have two brand new awards this year. The Spark Awards for Business. The Spark Award for Business is a Torch Award offered by us that, of course, is for businesses 6 months, they've been open for more than 6 months, but less than 5 years as of Sunday, July the 21st, 2019. And also, we're actually honoring, we used to do it by state, but now we're going to be doing it regionally with our Charity of the Year, any of those 501c3 organizations that demonstrate that effectiveness.
Right. And they're important to our communities. They really are, those nonprofits.
Absolutely. We had a lot of great nominations from around here last year when we ended up doing the Torch Awards. Now, the cutoff is July the 21st.
Okay.
And so people always ask me, like, where exactly are the judges from? The judges are not from this area. They're actually from a different region just to make sure that it's fair so that we make sure that the judging is going well. And then also we have those closing off dates. And then once we find out who those winners are, then what we're actually going to be going and doing is we're going to be doing a big celebration with them in September.
Oh, fun.
It's
how do
awesome.
You apply? Can a business apply for itself?
Well, yes, of course. A business can nominate. We accept self-nominations.
Okay.
It's a bit of a long email address to go with. It's bbb-business.org/torch-awards/businesses. It's just that small one that's right there.
Okay, so basically go to bbb.org and look it up for...
The best thing that you can do, just look up Torch Awards 2019. Yeah. Go into any search engine, you're going to find it there. Go to our bbb.org website. You'll be able to find it there, too. And, yeah, we do accept self-nominations, which I think is really, really good. I mean, you know, businesses know the best of what they do.
Well, and their employees and people that work with them, I'm thinking, more than maybe the owner or something, but the people who work and or buy there or whatever, you know, they have a chance to recognize a good business that they've enjoyed working with.
Absolutely. And, you know, the criteria there doesn't take too terribly long. It takes maybe half an hour, 45 minutes to be able to fill out all the things that we need to be able to get those nominations in. And we get a wide breadth of nominations from a lot of different industries. And, you know, we like to be able to see who's out there. And, you know, we didn't want to limit it either to our accredited businesses. This is for non-accredited businesses as well, just to be completely fair.
All right. Well, good. So once again, where do people go?
If people want to be able to make a nomination for themselves, or maybe they want to make a nomination for a business, because that would be great too.
Or nonprofit.
Yes. Absolutely. bbb-businesses.org/torch-awards/businesses.
Whew.
Yep.
I didn't fall asleep.
If you go to just the Torch Awards and don't add the businesses stuff on there, you could also get to it as well.
Yeah.
And give them
and
all.
You can pick the selection it.
Absolutely. So next up, we're going to be talking to Jeffrey McLaughlin with Professionals at Play. All right, so we're here with Jeffrey McLaughlin with Professionals at Play. He's taking his hat off, which I really and he's taking the sweater off as well. Does it say something different, or do you have the same thing underneath?
No, that's actually my brother-in-law's brewery in Breckenridge, and I thought, oh wait, if this is going to be on TV, I should be looking
professional. This is a podcast straight up. All we have is just audio whatsoever. If people want to take pictures during this podcast, we're not going to say no. We're not going to say anything like that.
I'm glad it's audio only because, you know, you've got a voice for radio and I've got the face for radio. So that's a good combination.
I shaved last night for the first time in like a week and a half. So it wasn't as majestic as your beard was. I'll be perfectly honest. It's too funny when you sit there and you realize how much it hurts to try to shave. I don't like it. I mean, when was the last time because for those people that don't know, if those people can't really see what's going on, Jeff has a huge beard. Like, I mean, like it is well groomed. It probably smells amazing.
Smells like pine right now.
Do you put stuff in there? Like how much maintenance goes into your beard? Because I've seen pictures of you on social media without a beard. Because I may or may not have creeped your Facebook profile. Because I wanted to know. I'm like, hey, okay, so what exactly is going on? So what? How long have you been growing it? And how much maintenance do you do?
Let's see here. I do remember specifically the last time I was clean shaven. Like totally clean shaven had to have been before my first child was born. So that's over a decade now. So I believe it's like 13 years ago.
13 years.
Yeah, and I've had facial hair ever since.
How often do you get rid of it though?
How often do you
bring it down? How low?
This is semi-trimmed right now. And it's probably, I mean, I can pull it up to just over my nose and.
I'm pretty sure you're doing the Pacific Northwest very, very proud in in showing that beard to the world. Because you travel like everywhere. Like,
yeah,
you
I travel all over.
all over the United States.
And you can tell, it's funny because when you go to different airports, you can tell where people are from. And the Pacific Northwest has a beard culture that you look at people and you go, I bet that guy's from the Pacific Northwest.
Wow.
And then you'll ask, you'll see a shirt and it'll be like, oh, Portland, yeah. Oh, that one's Seattle. Oh, that's North Idaho.
Is there different beards from different parts of the Pacific Northwest?
You know, it's kind of strange. I don't know if it's different parts necessarily.
Oh, okay.
But, well, I don't know. That's probably true because, like, North Idaho is a little different. It's a little more mangy. Mm-hmm. It's a little less kempt. I don't know. Mangy's not the right word.
You said that.
It.
I did not say that
I'm
whatsoever.
Part of the club. It's okay. Seattle's a little more trimmed, you know. And then Portland's, like, got the length because, you know, the beer drinkers and bike riders, you know.
Okay.
Dude, you got to roll. And I'm like, that doesn't make sense because aerodynamically – it seems like it's not like low speed, high drag.
I feel like in your bathroom you have like this cabinet that like is under lock and key that like nobody else can get into, and then you open it up and there's like one ray of light that comes out of the top of this cabinet, and it goes through all of your different facial care products that are there. Is there a lot? Like, do you have to do stuff for it?
What's that roundabout one that?
It's like a Lazy Susan.
Like a Lazy Susan.
Yeah,
with all my products on it. Mm. I just kind of spin it around, see, you know, there's like six or seven different oils. And there's like a couple of different balms, and there's like six combs.
Are oils part of it? Really?
Oils are part of it. Yeah, you got to have the right oils. That's like part of the sheen and the smell, and then the balms are to like lock it all in and keep the hair healthy and like give it some sort of like control so it doesn't like get crazy out and. You know.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
I could seriously talk about your beard literally for like the next 3 hours. We can't do that, but
oh man.
The first time that I met you, Jeff, it was August of last year. Mm-hmm. I basically recruited you. I'm like, hey, I need you to be in a Facebook Live video with me. You're like, sure, I'll go and do that. That seems like a great idea. And I'm just like, all right. So we went touring around the Inland Northwest Heart of Business. It was the summer festival.
Yeah,
it was there. It was great. That was a lot of fun, and it kind of got me to know, you know, the kind of large personality that you have. Like, and it's and it's impressive. It's impressive. Like, you you have a big personality. I've seen you speak in a professional capacity. Mm-hmm. I've had more conversations than we could. You know, we talked about cookies on Facebook. Like, that's we wanted our wives to have a bake-off, which would have been fun by itself.
That would be incredible. Anything that involves eating good food, I am all for.
Mm-hmm. And so another part is that you were originally a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you moved to professional supply. I really want to know about teaching, and what was that? What was teaching like for you? And what did you teach? And what grade did you teach? What subjects did you teach?
Okay, so this is so my education background is varied and very wide and deep. So I come from a family of educators. So okay. My dad and my mom were both teachers. My aunts and uncles were teachers. My grandparents were teachers. Everybody in my family was teachers or preachers. That's kind of what we were.
Okay.
We worked in the world of helping people get better at whatever it is they do. And that's just how I grew up. So when I originally got into education, I graduated from a Valley school here in Spokane.
Nice. Cool.
And 95. Woo! That's a long time ago. It's almost 25 years.
We don't generally use ages here, but if you want to, that's cool too.
The beard is mostly white now, so it's all good. But I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do after I graduated from North Idaho College. Mm-hmm. And so I just took my general credits, got stuff out of the way, and said, I need to do some sort of work to figure out what I want to do in my life. And my dad, who happened to be working at one of the Valley schools, said, hey, there's a position open working in special education as a paraprofessional. I think it'd be great for you. Plus, I'm there. It'd be a good chance to come and see what education's about.
Nice.
And so I started off in special education, working as a paraprofessional in a high school. Right. And it was fantastic. I absolutely loved it. It was so rewarding, so amazing. I loved the students. The students were the best. The staff, the teachers that I got to work with, were some of the most dedicated, wonderful professionals ever. And we had fun every single day, no matter what was going on.
Wow.
And I mean, the stories, the number of gut-busting, pee-your-pants laughing moments that were provided by students and teachers alike, and just the overall general interactions, it was hilarious and wonderful. And we got so many great things done because we had a good time doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, the teachers actually said, you know, here's the thing, is that you're starting to take over classes. And they were actually saying, hey, Jeff, here's a lesson. Can you teach it? And they would watch me. So I actually started teaching math and science and social studies and English. And I really liked it. And I really had fun. And they said, you know, you need to do more than just being a paraprofessional, because you can do it. And mm-hmm. not that being a paraprofessional didn't have its bonuses. I mean, it was a wonderful job. But they said, realistically, you need to be in the teaching position. And so I ended up going to Eastern and got my education degree, elementary degree with a specialty in reading, and a minor in special education, and a minor in theater. And
in theater?
Theater, yes.
I am not in any way, and there's no way that I'm surprised by like any of that. And it's interesting, because I mean, obviously I have to like, you know, creep you on your website and mm-hmm. see what exactly is going on. And I thought this was an amazing statement for, you know, about you, is that, you know, Jeff has a sincere passion for bringing people together for a common goal. His masterful storytelling, which if you ever want to be able to hear a story being told, you are a great person to tell it.
Mm-hmm.
And the ability to connect with an audience of all ages makes him a perfect fit for any group or organization. I thought that was a very, very true statement that was very, it kind of hit the nail on the head of like the personality that you have. So I really want to know how you got to, from being a gifted teacher, mm-hmm. two professionals at play. How did that transition come from? Because that's why I wanted people to know that you were a teacher first, mm-hmm. before we get into the professional play, because it seems very similar, but at the same time, it's a bit of a shift. It was a bit of a shift for you.
Oh, it was huge. Well, so after college, my first education jobs as a teacher, I started off in kindergarten.
Wow.
I started off as a kindergarten teacher, and I learned all about management and how to interact with humans, specifically tiny ones that are terrifying for most people. It is like herding cats, but it's also like training puppies.
Okay.
And so that consistency of behavior, building habits that are conducive for the group and that allow them to be successful in any way, shape, or form. Because obviously in education, you have a varying degrees of abilities in every single classroom. And so if you can get all of those kids on the same page going towards a common goal, they can go from wherever they're at and improve. Great. So your kids that were struggling with, you know, just being able to write their name, you know, some kids come into kindergarten, have never held a crayon or a pencil before. Wow. And you've got kids. I had one student that was already a classical violinist.
Whoa.
And he was reading in kindergarten. He was reading at a fifth grade level.
Unreal.
And so I was like, okay, so we're in kindergarten. And so I got to work with this group. And then you're way ahead. So I would go and get stuff from the fifth grade teacher and say, hey, what are you guys working on? Can I give it to this kid? Because he's already going to be advanced. He needs to be entertained. He needs to have some stuff that's going to challenge him.
Yeah.
And I can work with him. And he's pretty much an independent study kind of kid. And that's just who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he was brilliant. But he was also a great kid. And he would help out in class. He would help other kids, help other students. So I put him in an assistant professor role.
Well, that's neat. Yeah. That's a good way to do it, for sure.
So if you take, you know, that experience, and then look at, well, what about the workplace? You know, the workplace is trying to get a bunch of people going towards a common goal.
Mm-hmm.
And where's everybody else? Everybody's got their own different abilities. And if you can take somebody and say, hey, wait a minute, you're really good at this aspect of this business. Hey, can you work with some of these other people that are working on developing that aspect of the business and try and improve, you know, their learning and their so that's the training aspect of things.
Mm-hmm.
I basically learned human interaction from kids. I know, which is terrifying because kids are brutally honest. And so they will say the darndest things. They say what's on their mind, and I love that because they're completely honest and unflappable. That's just who they are.
Mm-hmm.
They will say things that, you know, in the adult world would be considered mean, but for them it's just the truth. And you learn, go, okay, cool. Well, it's not malicious. It's a kid telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so you go, okay, so I got to develop a thick skin. So, you know, okay, people want to make fun of me. I don't really care. Great. I mean, like I said, I have a face for radio. Mm-hmm. I get that. And so
we all get there. We all get there 100%. We all look at it after about 10 years in radio. Like, oh yeah, yeah, no. I see it.
It's there. Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah. That's why I'm glad there's no cameras.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's where I learned all about human interaction and getting a team to move forward on a positive goal together as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And based on skill level, based on, you know, attitudes, because obviously human beings are different and we come in all shapes and sizes and backgrounds and histories, and to try and get everybody going in the same way, you got to have a common goal. And so working with kids actually really helped move me into the business world of how do you get a team to go? How do you get the people around you motivated? How do you work together? And for me, it became out of the theater aspect of things. It came about fun. It became about telling a story. And if you can interweave the stories of your lives together, besides just having one thing in common, the workplace, if you start to learn about the people around you, mm-hmm. you start to make connections. And those connections will develop relationships. And relationships develop, you know, all sorts of wonderful things. I'm not talking romantically, although sometimes that happens.
All right, fair enough.
You know, that's up to your HR department, whatever it is. You guys got rules and policies and procedures. I'm not going to go there. It's not my expertise.
Oh, I mean, and really, like, the, you know, corporate culture is a hugely important part of any workplace
mm-hmm.
now. And, you know, you have to work with a wide range of people, which whatever job that you're going to go and do, you never know. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. you know, like the old saying, I mean, you don't get to choose your family. I mean, it's almost very, very similar to what with your job. You don't, you know, you get to choose the job, but you don't necessarily get to choose who you're working with directly. True. In most cases, I'm sure there's some cases you can choose where you can go with. One of the most interesting things that I remember hearing you talk about was the baby analogy. And I don't know if you remember this, but basically, so when babies, I actually told this to my wife, and it was such a fascinating thing, and I never thought of it, is that when, like, babies are, you know, are vulnerable and up against, you know, mm-hmm. when they have their hands up, people can't see that I have my hands up, but I have my hands up, and it's almost like a fear mechanism, and you were talking about that, and I was just like, wow, that is, I never thought of that. And then when babies are turned around and close to you and have their hands on you, it's more protected because their stomachs are not exposed. Where did that come from? I'd like to know where that information ended up coming from, because it was such a true statement, and I saw every person's head in the room looking around going, Oh yeah. That totally makes sense. Yeah. So what is that? Where did that come from?
Well, that actually that came from my wife, and I wish I could take credit for it, but my wife is far more brilliant than I am. She's one of the most intelligent people that I know. She's a pediatric occupational therapist who works in schools and does a lot of things for people. She's also a certified autism specialist, and she works in neuromuscular reflex integration. And so that whole concept actually comes from primitive reflexes. Every human is born with them, and they start in utero. And so that was her thing. And she said, hey, here's this basic thing. She went to a really intensive course, and she came back and was like, oh my gosh, this is so amazing. You can actually turn things on in people, and you can see when certain neuromuscular things in a person's body are not turned on. Sometimes it's the way a shoulder slumps forward, or sometimes it's how they walk and they've got a little, like, you know, you can look at somebody and go, oh, they got a little hitch in their giddy up. And you can see that, and you can go, oh, I wonder if that is, you know, is it a muscle thing? Is it a skeletal thing? You know, sometimes somebody breaks a leg and the bone grows back funky and they have a little, you know, a little waddle or something like that, and they can't ever help it. But with kids, with infants, they have these certain, it's a biomechanical thing. It's their nervous system. That we call it the toaster's being plugged in. So with your hand grasp, if you reach out, if you watch a baby, when they first start to grab things, they do all their fingers together.
It's
that natural motion. Eventually what happens is the toasters get plugged in neurologically. They can do one finger at a time.
Then
they get pointer finger thumb grasp. So that's one of those things. But what you were talking about, that fear reflex.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. And it's funny because Jeff always animates everything that's going on. So as you're sitting there, he is playing the part of the baby. And if you're able to see it, that's basically what you see, is you see Jeff as a baby and what exactly he's there with. But yeah, it was really interesting.
Yeah.
As you're describing these reflexes and these
fears. Well, if you think
fears.
About that, when you get scared, what do?
Mm-hmm. You put your hands up.
Your hands go up and you have that startle reflex. Your head goes back. Your body pulls back. That's a startle reflex.
Mm-hmm.
That's a natural. That's your body's way of protecting you.
Wow.
And with infants, if we put them in that position, like when people wear their children and they wear them face out, and the baby's hands are naturally in that position, they're naturally in a fear reflex.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you turn the baby around and face the baby on you, most of the time, the baby's going to be like, do that snuggle. So one arm will go up, a leg will go up, and then they'll reach around. It's like this crazy, you know, and you look at that right there happens to be a sleep reflex.
Interesting.
Yeah. So if you want your kids to sleep, you put them in that sleep, in that pattern.
And if I could figure a way to get my child to sleep, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going on.
I can help you. I can help you with that.
I don't know what to do, but it would save a lot of, it would save my wife and I a lot of hours of walking around the house and taking car rides.
Oh my gosh. I'm telling you right now, I wish my wife would have taken this class, this neuromuscular reflex integration class. I wish she would have taken that like 10 years ago.
When my kids
were infants, because okay. I didn't sleep through the night for the first 6 years of my child's life.
Wow.
Yeah,
I don't really want it to last that
I'm
long.
I'm so sorry.
Like, I don't want. I'm like, if you're going to share that information with me,
I tell you what, we will set up a time, and I can have my wife train you.
Oh
and
my
all of a sudden,
goodness!
I'm telling you, I don't know what that is worth. Sleep. Oh. If you put a dollar value on sleep, I keep telling my wife,
I value it more than anything else.
Right.
More than
sleep deprivation.
Else.
That's terrible.
the Golden Rule Playbook. So what this is, for those people that don't know that, it's a quick reference guide for building community in your place of work. Activities. I want to touch a little bit on activities, because I thought the activity that I was able to participate in was really, really cool. And I had actually done it at a completely different thing that I was at. It was like, hey, we want you to try this activity. I'm like, okay. And like, stand back to back to the people. And then now turn around. I'm like, I've done this before. So I'd like to know, I want you to describe what the activity is, and then I want to know because it wasn't necessarily explained what its relevance was and why it was. I mean, it's basically to get you to start thinking outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
But what is it? Like, what is this activity that you got us to do?
So the activity, I think that one was you guys stood back to back and I had you pick out a motion. And each motion had, you know, you had like your hands up, your hands out, your hands down, something like that. And you're I was
and then we
to
started
match.
Like taking off our.
Oh, yeah.
Change three things. And then it's like change five things. Yeah, yeah. And then it's change 10.
Change three things.
And then 15.
Change, yeah.
It's like.
Yeah.
How?
And that's the thing is that you think about it. If you look at a person, so if you face a person, you look at them and you have a conversation, you tell them some stuff. Great. You're just focusing really on what they're saying. You're not necessarily noticing the other things. But as you turn around, you change three things about your physical appearance. And then you try and have the person guess what changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, cool. You turned your glasses upside down. Okay, you turned your tie. You took your tie off. Okay, cool. Pretty easy. Oh, you put your name tag on the other side. Cool. That's pretty easy.
All right, yeah.
And I say, okay, cool. Anybody can do three things. Three things are easy. But then I have you turn back around and do, great, three more things. You have to leave the original three and then change three more things. And then you turn around and people are like, wait a minute, that's getting kind of challenging. And then you go, okay, cool, great. And then you have them guess again and they look at it and they go, okay, cool, and great. All right, now turn around, change three more things. And by this point, people are going, how can I change anything else? Oh my gosh, there's nothing else to change. When in reality, there's really quite a few things that you can do. And it's really fun to watch how people start to work together to change things. Mm-hmm. Like people start trading stuff.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, and I noticed that like different people in the room were just like, oh, you know, can I borrow your tie? Can I borrow your watch?
Yeah.
I mean, if I'd have known that, I would have had watches all the way down my arm. It would have been really easy. To be able to do it. But it definitely got myself and I think everybody else that participated outside of that small box in which we think of like things that we can actually change, things we can actually do, because it was absolutely cool to be able to see where people had started from and where they went to.
Oh my gosh,
we had to
hilarious.
Put everything back in order. It's like, you know, like then people are starting to take off like parts of their shirts and I'm like, I don't know if we want to go down that road. There's HR issues down there, but it was really kind of cool. And I think that anyone and everyone out there should even try to experience it at one point or another.
Yeah, and that's just one of many different activities that people can do. And I mean, honestly, that's not even a game that I didn't come up with that game. Mm-hmm. It's just that activity. I shouldn't call it a game. It's an activity.
Yeah.
But it's something that I've seen, and it's experiential education. It's doing something and then learning from it, and how does it apply to what you're doing directly in your business? You know, with research and development, it's an amazing thing because so many times we think within a certain set of parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get people that are trained a certain way to think in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And until you actually do something that takes their mind completely out of the business that they're doing and puts it in a different stage, then all of a sudden their brain chemistry starts going, oh, wait a minute, what if I didn't even think about this? Or all of a sudden you have this brilliant idea that applies to what you're working on, even though it stemmed out of something completely different.
Wow.
And so that's the power of play. I think Albert Einstein said play is the highest form of research.
Oh, yeah.
I've got it quoted on a business card somewhere.
Do you have it on your business card?
I read it on the internet.
Random business cards. That
on random business. It's on somebody else's business card.
Yeah, it's like I just stole somebody's business card. It seemed like such a good idea at the time. I photocopied it. I cut it out.
I actually have a business card from somebody. All she did was went to FedEx and she grabbed all the business cards and then she just put her information over the FedEx stuff.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought, dang it, why did I spend $500 on business cards?
That would give you like so much information that you could just like sit there and you could just go and be like, hey, you know what, I can just have anybody's information. I mean, if you start getting random phone calls from people, I'm pretty sure that would.
No, I don't do that. I don't ship things. Sorry, but it's your name on the FedEx card.
So, what's your favorite activity to do with groups, and what and I'll ask you a follow-up right now because you can include it in the answer, but what do you find gets the most immediate and most lasting results for these groups that you go and talk to? You know, like you walk in there and, you know, I'm sure that it's at part A, and by the time you're done, it's like way over here in the middle of nowhere. Like this is not where you're expecting these people to be.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because depending on the group and what we're our goals are. So if we set up a goal of, are we just trying to build team unity? Or are we trying to focus on this team really has to learn how to communicate effectively? So the different goals based on what the management, ownership, whatever wants to do with the day, that kind of dictates some of the activities that I'll do. However, things that I absolutely love that I see the most change the quickest, I know it sounds ridiculous, but tag. The game
really?
Of tag. Tag with adults. Is
what are the what are the rules that are involved in tag? Because I'm assuming that you have to set it up. I guess there's no tag backs.
That's the thing is that if they're, you know, I'm a professional tag player, not unlike the movie Tag. I haven't been playing for 30 years.
I love that
Isn't
movie.
That great, it was a great movie.
I loved it from
and the fact that it's based here out of like guys from Gonzaga.
There were so many places. I'm like, oh, I know that in Spokane.
Yeah.
I know that.
I recognize that. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Had I known they were filming that, I would have shown up at random places.
you just see this beard come up over the bag and be like, oh, what is going on?
That beard's back. Chase him away.
Goodness. Oh my goodness. The continuity guy is just losing his mind. We need to go and fix that at some point.
Just edit him out. I'm supposed to be in that movie, but I was edited out.
So what rules do you have? Like when you play tag, do you play in offices or is this
I play in offices. Wow. In offices, whatever open space we have available. Sometimes it is an office space and we have aisles. And I can tell you right now, the more crowded it gets, the more fun it becomes. Wow. If you get, you know, let's say 25 to 50 people and you play a game of tag. Now, normally the tag rules are one person's it, everybody else is trying to be tagged. Mm-hmm. But what I do is I set it up, it's one-on-one tag. You versus another human being, tag. And I know you're thinking, I can see the look on your face. You're like, wait a minute, how does that work? Because then it just gets into a slap fest, right? Well, tag, you're it. Well, you start to add rules. You start to add rules that make it more challenging.
Okay.
And that then becomes absolute hilarity. I mean, I swear, it's funny to watch adults play, because adults play differently than kids.
Mm-hmm.
But when you set up rules, like rule number one, obviously, is always be safe. So our the fastest we can go is walking.
Oh.
So I set that up as rule number one. Because if everybody starts running, you know, you got Jimmy the linebacker over here. And
I'm just waiting for somebody to like go diving over desks. People are getting hurt.
Okay, because you're from Canada.
I am, yes.
And I did not realize this, but when in Canada, if you say the game tag, that's code word for hockey without skates. And body checking's legal.
I have never heard of that in my entire life.
I hadn't heard of it either until I worked with a group of high school students, and I said, we're going to play tag, and I'm not kidding. Some kid's like, oh, yeah, this is going to be great, eh? And he takes out his teeth. He actually took out his teeth.
I love how the Canadian accent like comes like right to the forefront. It's like, oh, we're saying A now, are we?
Oh yeah.
A. I've dropped it from my vernacular entirely. I've never heard playing tag and it involves hurting people. Like I've never
heard. Oh, not
heard
hurting,
that.
Just body checking.
Oh no, that is.
Body checks are hilarious.
Okay,
it's much
slower. Yeah.
But still, people are taking teeth out. I mean, I had to slow that one way down.
Okay, so walking is the first
thing. So walking is the first rule.
Yeah.
Second rule is if you and your partner have to decide who's it first. So you can rock, paper, scissors, Rochambeau, but whatever you want to do, kind of finger on nose, not it, horns,
flip
whatever you
want
to do.
Whatever.
Flip a coin, whatever it is. Whoever's it first has to spin in a circle three times before they can give chase. So now you've got the dizzy factor.
Do you provide helmets and safety pads for people when they're?
I do say it's challenged by choice. So if somebody's like, "Whoa, I can't do that. I've got vestibular issues."
Oh my god!
I'll be like, "Okay, you can spin once."
Okay.
They're like, "Or you know,
you need a nice slow spin there. No slow.
Real
we want
slow.
To keep
it doesn't
you.
Matter how fast you go. It's
okay.
Because you know there's strategy. So
okay,
you get the spin three times and then you have to walk.
Okay.
But that's like let's say that's round one. Round one, you know, and then you can do a debrief on how many of you were able to tag your partner, how many of you were able to escape, how many of you used a person as a human shield, you know, how many strategies were there.
And so there's like 25 people playing one-on-one tag,
in
an entire room.
Yeah, in a room.
Okay.
So you obviously now you can start talking about like herd mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see what happens is people will start to spin clockwise or counterclockwise. They'll start walking in circles and it becomes like a giant fishbowl. Because if you put parameters, here's the area you have to stay in, they're not going to zigzag back and forth. They're going to go around the outside edges, and then they all start going in the same way. And so then there becomes strategy, and it's human behavior. It's the most fascinating thing ever. And you can have so many conversations about, well, wait, why did everybody all of a sudden start spinning the same way? because all of a sudden it becomes easier to go with everybody else. Go with the flow than to try and swim upstream. Well, which one's more effective, though?
Huh.
Is swimming upstream going to be more effective for you getting away because
everybody else is
going the opposite way, right?
Wow.
But you're also a visual target then because you're doing something differently than everybody else.
I feel like I would like want to keep eye contact with that person like the entire time. Like,
oh.
I mean, it feels like there's going to be, you know, like the, you know, that 1,000-yard stare that people are having.
Oh, it's
across the room, and they just, you know, like they know. So after the first, is it over after the person's tagged, or can you tag back and forth?
Oh, no, that's it. That's the thing, okay. Is that as soon as you tag the person, they have to spin 3 times and then give chase.
Wow.
So now it becomes back and forth, and you would not believe the sounds that adult humans make when they're laughing hysterically. I mean, you get squeals, you get screams. It's like, oh my gosh, are we in like a horror film? Because there's people like screaming. And the more people there are, the more fun it becomes. It's strange. There's right around 150 to 200 people playing tag in an enclosed area.
Oh, my goodness. I want to see video of that. That seems amazing.
It's intense. It can be really intense. But then you can also see, here's the other funny thing, is that, again, human behavior. You can watch because you set the rules. Everybody has to walk, right? That's rule number one. Got to walk. Number two, you got to spin 3 times before you give chase. And then rule number three is I make a parameter. I say, here's the boundaries.
You can't go
run hide in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. That's cheating. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah. So I kind of give those rules.
I feel like that'd be the first thing that I do. Be right. Like every rule. Be like, oh, I'm going to go to this.
I'm going to go there. I'm going to go there.
Jeff keeps making rules to not let me win.
It's like I haven't played this before, but I have. But then you watch people and you say, wait, how many of you followed the rules and how many of you maybe bent the rules just a little bit to so that you could win?
Yep.
And it's real interesting because you can call out certain behaviors of people. Like there are some people that are just, their whole goal is to win and they don't care about the rules at all.
You have a lot of those, you know, those people that are just going to go and do that. So what is the, once it's done, once everybody's wrapped up and you know, you've finished that, you know, how many rounds usually go? 2 or 3?
I usually go 2 or 3 rounds.
What's the feeling in that organization when they're done? Is it a sense of relief? Are they closer with their colleagues because they went? You know, are they no longer going to be friends because somebody takes somebody else 15 times? Like what is their mentality? Because I mean, it's a lot about building. Mm-hmm. You know, with corporate culture, it's a lot about building those relationships within the office.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot easier conversations between colleagues after that.
Well, the ease of conversations comes from the experience itself. If you've played with another human being, you've actually had joy and laughter with another human being, that influences your relationship. And if it's the first time you've ever interacted with somebody else and it's a super positive experience, chances are those experiences that follow after that are going to have a positive viewpoint because of that first initial experience. It's that you never get a second chance to make a first impression.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a lot of groups that, wait a minute, we work together all the time. Well, you might be in this department and I'm in this department and our paths cross and I might recognize you, but I've never talked to you before.
Mm-hmm.
And you play tag with that person, or you laugh and you're goofy and you're silly and you do change three more things. You laugh and you have joy. There's a connection there. And if you think about it, you're best friends in your entire life. How did you become best friends? You played.
Yeah.
You know, it probably started off, your best friend probably started off as somebody that, you know, you met in school and you said, hey, you want to go kick a soccer ball? And they went, okay, cool. Yeah, sure. That'd be great. Hey, you want to go hit each other with hockey sticks? Yeah, that'd be awesome. Let's go. And that was Canadian.
I was going to say that was the teleplay version of my elementary school experience as laid out by Jeff. We in Canada, we were playing, you know, we were doing the thing where you go in the line, you have to break the line.
Oh, yeah, Red Rover.
That's what it is. It's like, I don't remember the words of this. I'm sure when my daughter gets older, I'll learn these things. But yeah, Red Rover was...
I don't even know if kids are allowed to play that anymore.
I'm like, I feel like it's not because you got to hold the hands. And
right,
break
and you
got to
run through.
I feel like that's not going to be in one of your sessions and be like, no. We tried that one time and people got hurt. They had to walk over.
I do a version of it.
Oh,
I do a version of it where instead of Red Rover, you get a group. Let's say you get a group of like 8 to 10 people, and you elect each person's going to get a chance to go. So everybody's going to get their opportunity, but the group has got to kick one person out of the team. So that person gets kicked out of the team, and they're on the outside now. Everybody locks arms, and the rule is that the person on the outside has to talk their way back in. You can talk. You can whatever you need to say. Your entire job is to get your team to let you back in.
Really?
And
that's an interesting way.
Right. And you think about it. And you go, well, wait a minute. What about those people that are really shy? Well, how do you? What skills do you have that would allow you to talk your way back into a circle? What if you're really shy? Do you just sit there and like give them puppy dog eyes and like look really cute, and then they like, oh, or do you start like squeeze out a single tear, and people are like, oh my gosh, you're crying. Come here, we're so sorry.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, there's people that'll barter. There's people that'll like, you know, like if you guys don't do what I want, then I'm gonna, and like, dude, there's like 10 of them and one of you, like.
So you get to see the personalities come out.
So personalities come out.
Really, really comes.
Negotiation skills and all these different. And so it's real interesting because if you get a group of salesmen, they're very salesy. You get a group of accountants, they're very logistical. And you get a group of the, like really driven business owners, and they're like, just get back in. And like, you know, no physical touch. That's the rule. They got to let you in. You can't work your way. You can't just like rip people apart and get in the circle, because that's not how life works.
I feel like that's where like the walking rule came from. Right. You know, a lot of the other rules, well, you can't rip them apart. You can't do that.
No ripping somebody's arm from their body and beating them with it to get your way. That's not fair.
We need no dislocated shoulders in the middle of this. Has there been any activities that you've had to like remove over the years? Like do you change them up fairly frequently, and you know, or do you,
well, through trial and error. You know, a lot of working with kids has been trial and error, and and that helps with adults, because you know, typically you think that adults would be able to hear and follow the rules. You would think.
I don't necessarily think, but maybe, just maybe it could happen. I don't know.
Well, you never know. I mean, it's one of those things where sometimes it depends on the group you're working with, and what are they, you know, what is the business, what's the goal, and that kind of stuff. But it's really interesting to just see human behavior. And some of the goals, not necessarily the goals, but the activities that we do are chosen specifically for a group. Mm-hmm. Some of them have been developed over, you know, 14, 15 years of my work in, you know, almost 20 years now in education. And you still work with kids, and I still do activities with kids. I try things out on kids that I can use with adults. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because kids are, you know, you can watch their behavior, and they're not very good liars, you know. Really, they're not.
They're just terrible at it.
They're terrible at it. I mean, they'll be like, yeah, I really like this. And their eyebrows are furrowed, and you can see their body language, their arms are crossed, and their hips like out to the side. And you're like, wow, okay, I don't think that's true, but it's cool. You just keep telling yourself that.
You just keep going. You just keep doing you.
You do you, kid. You do you.
You'll be fine. Do you find that a lot of the problems and, like, you know, not maybe problems is the wrong word, but a lot of the challenges that the businesses are, whether it's, you know, business with 3 or 5 people or a business with 100 people, are a lot of them the same? Are they the same with that?
A lot of them are the same.
Yeah.
I think it's funny because a lot of the business issues stem down to simple human communication issues. It's how do we get along? How do we work together? How do we, you know, I had it wasn't a client. It was a gal that I actually had the opportunity to sit next to on an airplane.
Really?
And, you know, as humans, I wish I could say that we are non-judgmental creatures, but that's not true. We judge somebody within 2.5 seconds of meeting them. And I don't want people to be judgmental. I want them to be good judges of character. And so that's what I work on with my children. But I got to admit, I sat next to this gal on an airplane, and she was a sight to behold. She was probably in her, I would say, mid to late 60s, had these very interesting, like, spectacles on. She had like this Rastafarian hat. She had this sparkly t-shirt, cut-off shorts, and Birkenstocks, and then 2 Maltese puppies under the seat in front of her.
Wow. Okay.
And I was like, okay, it's an interesting gal. And so for half the plane ride, we didn't talk. And then all of a sudden, my wife started talking to her, and she goes, oh my gosh, you got to meet my husband. So my wife and I switched places, and I start talking to this gal, and she happened to own Popcornopolis out of LA. So the popcorn, right?
Yeah.
Delicious. First of all, it's really good popcorn. And she was just this interesting gal, and she was super nice. And it was talking to her about her business, and she had 2 facilities that were the same. So one was the production facility, and then upstairs was the office and sales and all that kind of stuff. So she explained how everything went and the different cultures they had in each area.
Interesting.
And it was so interesting because she said the culture in the production facility was really, really good.
And she says, we hire entire families. And she goes, almost all of our workers are Hispanic. And she says, and it's amazing. And we thought early on that everybody wanted to be promoted to a manager. Oh. And she goes, I made a mistake. And she goes, I didn't actually talk to the employees to find out if that's what they wanted. And realistically, that's not what they wanted. What they wanted was they wanted to be certified on different machines so that they became indispensable to the company.
Interesting.
And what happened for her was now she's got these different employees who can work on any number of machines. Mm-hmm. And guess what? That employee is indispensable. But if somebody gets hurt or gets sick and has to take a day off, guess what? Now they can shuffle. They've got coverage.
Oh, unreal.
And she goes, and the entire group, they all work together like a family. And so she goes, when we hit production goals, we have a party. We, you know, we have a picnic. We celebrate. We, you know, every time somebody gets a new certification, we have a big celebration for them. And she goes, oh, my gosh, it's like a family down there. We don't have any problems. We don't have any problems. And I said, awesome. How's the office?
So that was a completely different conversation.
It was a completely different conversation. And it was so funny to listen to her say, it is so different. She goes, I watched this just the other day. And she goes, I had two employees sitting right next to each other in an office. Literally the cubicle wall was like separating them. Two younger, like early millennials, like, well, actually probably whatever's after millennials, Gen Z, whatever they are, I have no idea. But she goes, we had them. And she goes, they sent over 40 emails to each other over the course of 4.5 hours. Wow. Trying to get clarification on a single thing that would have taken them 10 seconds to talk about. All they had to do was pop up over the cubicle and say, hey, what do you mean when you say this? Instead, they wasted an entire half a day of work because they didn't have the relationship. They didn't feel comfortable enough to actually stand up and talk to the person next to them. That's a big issue. If in any organization like that, just think about the productivity of an employee who will spend 4.5 hours trying to solve a problem via email that could take a 30-second to a 5-minute conversation. Like, the loss of productivity is mind-numbing.
I can't. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I had no idea that that was just kind of something that was there. But, I mean, I'm trying to just remember how many emails I've sent in a day. Gosh. How many I do send in a day. I'm like, I could not tell you that number. I mean, it's quite a few. But
yeah,
I have absolutely no I had no idea. I always like to do this rapid fast five questions that I like to ask people. You don't have to answer them quickly, but I do like very, very, very interesting answers. So
ice cream.
It's really that likely will not be one of the answers.
Cool.
So,
okay.
What is your intentions? What are you planning on doing for the 4th of July? What is your ideal 4th of July look like?
My ideal 4th of July is my brother-in-law and nephews will come over from the coast. We will hang out in Coeur d'Alene, have a nice barbecue, hopefully get the boat out on the water. Although it's not my boat, nor do I own a boat. I will just find one and hopefully take it out without getting arrested. You know, laws, they're kind of like more suggestions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so hopefully go out and have some fun on the water.
Okay,
and
then, fair enough.
Our neighborhood is pretty epic for fireworks. And so we will spray down everything the day and a half beforehand, and then we will participate in the watching of the fireworks lighting.
What do you mean by spray down everything?
Make sure everything's very well watered down.
Oh, okay. I got you. I'm just like,
yeah, because Idaho's got some interesting rule. Idaho is like, you know, yeah, you want to shoot stuff up in the air that could set the world on fire. That kind of scares me a little bit. We've actually finally got rules that say no explosive fireworks.
I had no idea.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Idaho. So I love Idaho.
It's
a great place. So that's what I'm going to do. We're going to have some fun.
In minutes and seconds, how much maintenance does your beard take?
Minutes
per
and
day, per day,
per day, minutes per day. And seconds.
Yeah.
4 minutes and 47 seconds.
Is that a rough number?
That's a rough number.
When you wake up in the morning, does it end? Is it like some people's hair when they go to bed at night and it goes everywhere?
Oh yeah.
Do you have to make sure that it's dry? When you go to bed,
No. Okay.
Because my wife has long hair, so she has to make sure it's dry.
Dry
before she goes to bed,
because it's all like
yeah.
No, you have to comb it out, so it's got to be combed in the morning. You have to comb it out.
Of course
morning.
It does.
Then you have to put your oil on. Then you have to put your balm on. Then you have to comb it again. Now, if I'm getting real fancy, then it's like a 20-minute affair, because then I have to like take a flat iron, like the hair irons, and like straighten
it out.
There's
a hair iron?
There's a beard hair iron that's
what?
Just for beards now.
I didn't know that. Do you get out like the ironing board and make sure that it's done? Oh gosh,
that'd be so cool. No.
They need like beard sized ironing boards is what they need. Like a little beard. Yeah, exactly. Like you can just sit there and you can flat iron. I didn't know that you flat ironed beards.
Yeah, I've done it. How is that? I've only done it once because it was such a pain. I was like, you know, I'll just take the balm and the oils and I'll just comb them in, and then I'll just get my little tweezers out and trim the stragglers.
Yeah, I couldn't grow a beard if my life depended on it. Is it harder for you to get up in the morning or to fall asleep at night?
Ooh. I'm going to say fall asleep at night.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like your mind is going like a mile a minute. Like, it's just tough to just kind of...
Oh, no. At night, I'm a few deep. Well, okay, that's not true. Sometimes it's harder to go to sleep at night. Depends on where I'm at. So recently I just did an engagement, speaking engagement over in Oak Harbor, which happens to be right next to an Air Force base.
Oh.
Yeah.
And if you're not used to that,
if you're not used to like jet engines, like 30 feet over the hotel, the whole thing just shakes. I mean, it actually set car alarms off in the parking lot. Nice. And they went until like 11:15 at night. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I talked to people. I'm like, do you guys get used to that? And they're like, oh, we don't even hear him anymore. How can you not? You can feel it, the vibrations of a jet engine.
This is like having a subway go past you. Right. If it goes every 7 minutes, you're not going to notice it.
Right. Eventually, you know, like living in the countryside next to a dairy farm, you eventually don't notice the smell.
You'll be fine. After you buy a product, either online or in a store, do you submit a review about the product or business?
Don't inhale water or whatever that is I'm drinking.
I don't. We're not even bringing up what's in that container because I don't think anybody else needs to know what's in the container.
They wouldn't believe this anyway.
No, they probably wouldn't. That's why we're not taking pictures. That's why we're a completely audio medium. So, yeah. So, after you buy a product, either online or in a store, it could be a product or a service, do you submit a review about the product or business?
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
I'm inconsistent with it. Depends on what it is and you know, if it's like just little things, not necessarily.
Okay.
If it's something bigger, a bigger product or more expensive product that I think should have some sort of value, trinkety things, no. Mm-hmm. More expensive things, yes.
Okay. And if you are going, are you going to go to the Spokane County Fair this year?
Ooh, I haven't done that in a long time.
So if you did, for this one time and one time only, mm-hmm. you go down there and it means there's zero calories in any food that you were to eat.
Oh.
What fair food are you getting?
Oh, man.
Like, you can get anything. Oh, I tried funnel cake for the first time, like, a few years ago, and it literally covered me. Like, powdered sugar was, like,
everywhere.
It was in my ears. I don't know how. Like, I don't even know how that's even possible. It, like, literally went everywhere. And I'm just like, and I looked at my wife, and I said, you know what? I am never eating this again. Like, I had to go be hosed down.
Yeah, yeah.
Afterwards, like, it was just uncomfortable for everybody. Oh, it was good. It was okay. It was all right. But yeah, like what is there? Oh, do God. You try the? Would you try the novelty fair foods?
I would probably try a novelty item, but
deep fried tarantulas or something.
Oh, dude, I would try that. You wouldn't even have to be at the fair. I would try deep fried tarantulas just to say I've done it. But no, we had a family. My cousins over on the coast happened to run at fairs. They would run an elephant ears.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Like the cinnamon and sugar on a big giant flatbread fried. Yep. Oh, my gosh. I love those.
That's your jam?
That would be my jam.
That's cool.
I would love those. Or, gosh, what else is there? I know it's been a long time since I've been to the fair. God, those are just delicious.
And remember, it's zero calories. Like, if you want to have, like, deep fried spaghetti, I saw that last year. Deep fried spaghetti. I didn't think that was a thing. So they make it into, like, a block. And then they deep fry the block. Like it's a block of spaghetti that you just sit there and you see it and it comes on a stick. Like I feel like
everything
stick oriented needs to be at the fair. Like anything. I saw pizza on a stick. Pizza's fine. You know what it has? It has a handle at the back. And that's perfectly fine. But I don't. Yeah, you can get pizza on a stick. You can get anything on a stick at the fair.
That's true.
I do love corn dogs.
I do love corn. A good corn dog.
I could have corn dogs like for every meal. I'm pretty sure my wife wouldn't be cool with that. But
mine neither. Oh my gosh, that's very cool. So good.
Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining me. Awesome. If people want to know more about you and your organization, Professionals of Play, what can they do? Where can they go?
They can go to jeffmclaughlin.com. That's GEOFF. And then McLaughlin, like Sarah McLaughlin, the singer, but nobody knows how to spell that one either. So I'll go with MCLA.
I had to like respell your name like so many times on this. I'm just like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to know how to say Jeff's name, but it doesn't really matter.
It's so. Yeah. McLaughlin is MCLACHLAN.com, or they can just go to professionals@play.com.
Okay. Very, very cool. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for joining us for BBB Talks. I'm Tyler Russell, the Marketplace Manager for the Better Business Bureau in Northwest and Pacific, serving Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. Of course, thank you to Kent as well and the team here at Spokane Talks Online. You can, of course, find Spokane Talks Online on YouTube at Spokane Talks, their Facebook page, Spokane Talks Media, on Twitter, Spokane Talks. Also, they have a website and email, SpokaneTalksMedia.com. Email is SpokaneTalksOnline@gmail.com. And of course, everything BBB, you can find us on social media, Facebook, Better Business Bureau, serving Eastern Washington and Northern Idaho. You can, of course, find me on Twitter, Tyler BBBNWP. That's my handle on Twitter. You can also find us on Instagram, BBB Northwest and Pacific. You can also go to our website, BBB.org, and you can email me, Tyler.Russell@thebbb.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you again next time.